Rav Eric Cooper Smith is the dole umashke mitoras rabo la'acherim. For years, lo mosh mitocha oel, it was Eric, Rav Yitzchak, that had an open door to the Rosh Hashiva. He heard firsthand what the Rosh Hashiva wants. And he was mekabel upon himself to relay that message and to get the will of the Rosh Hashiva done as much as was humanly possible. It's our opportunity to hear Rav Yitzchak Cooper Smith now, a year after the Rosh Hashiva has passed. We've gone through a difficult year, but nevertheless, I think we all recognize that to a great extent, to an incredible extent, the yeshiva remains dedicated, ever more so, to the ideals of the Rosh Hashiva. And it's muchly through the efforts of Rav Yitzchak Cooper Smith.
Sorry. I wasn't expecting to be this emotional. I didn't even bring Kleenex. But I guess that in many ways, that more than anything else, captures how I feel about the Rosh Hashiva. And I'm sure that if he was here, he would say, give me a break, grow up, stop being a baby. Successive mourning is for babies, little people. We have a job to do, you gotta be responsible, and let's move on. So we're gonna take his advice and we're going to we're gonna do that. But I think that, you know, as Rav Gil said, that I knew the Rosh Hashiva for 30 years. I came here as a young man. I was 19, 30 years ago. And it was the Rosh Hashiva's Torah, his wisdom, his commitment to really articulate Torah in a way that could speak to any Jew, because he understood Torah. He understood the depths of Torah. He understood that, of course, the Kadosh Baruch Hu is speaking to every single human being. He's eloquent. He's articulate. He has every piece of information that every human being yearns for. It's just to look at Torah this way, it's to appreciate Torah this way, just to to be a receptacle, to be the person to share with people. And in those days, I was far from Torah, and in one shir, one class, Rosh Hashiva, I realized that this is a very special man, and that he had a very, very special understanding of reality, that if the more time that I could spend with him, the greater opportunity I could have to learn from him. It would only enhance my life in many, many ways. And the last 13 years, as I moved back to the Eretz Yisrael with my family, I made a cheshbon that I figured that just modest terms, if you spend a couple hours a day working with Rosh Yeshiva, talking to Rosh Yeshiva, learning to Rosh Yeshiva, I spent over 8,000 hours with him in the last 13 years. I'm sure it was more, but minimally, it was a tremendous amount of time, and it's such a fantastic gift because it gave me so much in terms of understanding and appreciation of Torah, of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, of the Jewish people, of responsibility. So many critical, important life lessons, just to be in his presence, to watch how he dealt with situations, to watch how he handled the challenges and the frustrations and the difficulties and his understanding and his explanations. Just unbelievable. So I know that there's no question that if the Rosh Hashiva was here, there's no question in my mind that he would be telling us that every event is an opportunity to grow. He stood from this podium many, many times, and he would always urge all of us to take advantage of every opportunity that came our way to grow, to change, to be better, to take more responsibility. And I'm sure that on the occasion of his first Yahrzeit, there is no question in my mind that his expectation is that all of us would make every effort possible to change, to grow, to use the opportunity to become better people, to become better Jews, become more responsible, to learn his Torah, to take his Torah more seriously, to grapple with it, to try to, in a real way, put it into our lives and make it a part of who we are. I'm not here as one of the rabbis. You have many great Talmud Chachamim speaking. I'm here as the Talmud. And I'd like to share with you, depending on the time, five ideas that I think in many ways framed the Rosh Hashiva's view of the world. And I think that that is the most fitting tribute I can give to him, to share those ideas. And it's also a nechama to me, because the more I talk about his Torah, the more I share it, the clearer I get it for myself. It enables me to feel very connected to him and to feel close to him. So the first is, and they all will revolve around the issue of responsibility. I'm sure that will surprise most of you. But his first issue, the first concept is that the Rosh Hashiva always taught that responsibility is not dependent on a person's position, their stature, or their abilities. That responsibility begins the moment any human being recognizes a problem. The moment that any of us recognize that there is an issue, a problem, something that needs to be addressed, whether it's in Klal Yisrael or the entire world, we are then, from a Kadosh Baruch Hu's perspective, we are on point. We just got our assignment. And he would teach this lesson through the events of Nadav and Avihu. We all know that in Parshas Shmini, when there was the dedication of the Mishkan, that Nadav and Avihu, the sons of Aaron, brought a korban that was unsanctioned. And Hashem killed them, he brought a fire and destroyed them. Aaron, of course, was distraught. This fantastic moment for Klal Yisrael, and here in the pinnacle of Klal Yisrael's development to that point in time, his two sons are suddenly killed in front of the entire Jewish people. Incredibly shocking event. And Moshe goes to Aaron in an attempt to ease the pain. As the Pasuk says, "Bekrovei Kadesh," with my close ones I will be sanctified. Moshe speaking in God's name. And Rashi brings a Medrash and says that Moshe said to Aaron that I thought that when Hashem told me this, that I assumed that it was going to be you and I, Aaron, that we, as the leaders of the Jewish people, that we would be the vehicles that would bring the entire Jewish people closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And now I see that through the death of Nadav and Avihu, that they were chosen, that in some way
they are greater than you and I, Moshe and Aaron. And Aaron was silent, v'yidom Aaron, and many interpret that he accepted that nechama because he understood the meaning of what it meant to have his two children die to bring the entire Jewish people closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the Rosh Yeshiva would explain that in addition to this medrash, there's a Gemara in Sanhedrin that says that one day Nadav and Avihu were walking together behind Moshe and Aaron. And I believe Nadav said to Avihu, when are these two old men going to get out of the way so you and I can lead Klal Yisrael? And the Rosh Yeshiva would ask, which way is it? Are Nadav and Avihu greater than Moshe and Aaron, as the Medrash says? Or are they chutzpahdik upstarts challenging the leadership of the Jewish people like the Gemara says? And you explain that it's two sides of the same coin. That Nadav and Avihu were greater, and therefore they were the korbanos, because it meant that in some aspect they saw a need in Klal Yisrael that Moshe and Aaron were not as sensitive to. And it was because they were more amongst the people, as opposed to being distant as the leaders, that they perceived a lacking within Klal Yisrael that Moshe and Aaron did not perceive. And in that way they were greater. The Gemara in Sanhedrin relates the mistake they made as a result of that greater insight and that greater awareness of what Klal Yisrael needed. They became a little bit arrogant. They said, when are they going to be out of the way so we can take over? And the Rosh Yeshiva would explain, what was their mistake? They made a fundamental mistake. That they believe, when does responsibility begin? When you get the job. When we become the leaders, then we'll deal with the lacking in Klal Yisrael that we'll see. Then we'll be able to implement the plan to address the problem that we see within the Jewish people. And the Rosh Yeshiva said, that's the mistake. That responsibility begins the moment any individual recognizes the problem, recognizes the lacking. And he would explain, there is no hierarchy to responsibility. It doesn't matter what your position is. Every human being, every Jew, is equally responsible. There is a hierarchy to implementing responsibility. And that Nadav and Avihu should have gone to Moshe and Aaron as the leaders, as the Gedolim, and said, we perceive this problem within the Jewish people. Here's our evidence. Here's how we see it. We have a program that we believe can address it in a meaningful way and make a difference. What do you think of it? Do you agree with our perception? Do you agree with our assessment? Do you agree with our plan? And then go implement it under their leadership. And the Rosh Yeshiva would often add, not always in public, but that this was a little bit of a problem within Eish HaTorah. Because every guy in Eish HaTorah knows that we've got a little bit of a slice of reality that a lot of people don't have. Just by virtue of our background, coming from a secular world, seeing the Jewish people who are secular and what it means to be bereft of Torah mitzvahs, that we have a certain perception and perspective of what Klal Yisrael needs that very few people can have because of our background. So we have to be very careful with that. You can't make the same mistakes. You can't wait till you have a position of responsibility to deal with it. But you also have to make sure that whatever perception you see and whatever program you want to implement to deal with it, you have to do so under the guidance of Torah leadership. That there is no hierarchy to responsibility, but there is a hierarchy to how it's implemented. Otherwise, it's hefkeris, it's anarchy. And he would sometimes criticize us on both points, that we were waiting to be appointed. Oh, I have the position, I have the job now, I've got the tap on the shoulder, now it's my job, as opposed to saying, no, if I see the problem, I'm responsible. HaKadosh Baruch Hu expects me to deal with it. And if we do deal with it, it has to be dealt with appropriately, through proper channels, and not in a way that undermines authority. That was the first lesson. The second lesson is more common. And I mentioned before, during the Shiva, that I believe that in many ways, the Rosh Yeshiva's primary role model in life was Sarah Schneer, as strange as that may sound. Because he saw in Sarah Schneer a simple person who, because of their incredible concern for Klal Yisrael, not only made a difference, but save the Jewish people. And this was always his message to us and always his example, that any one of us, if we care enough, can not only make a difference, but can make a profound difference and save the Jewish people, as Sarah Schneer did. And he would make the point, he would tell it in a very entertaining way about Chatzpah Sarner. I won't tell that part of the story, but he would mention, how is it possible that a Jew who was essentially uneducated, could not read a blot of Gemara, that all the Rabbanim gathered at this bris agreed that if there was one person in the last 100 years that saved Klal Yisrael, it was Sarah Schneer. How is it possible that this woman, again, who was uneducated, that she saw what the Chafetz Chaim didn't see, what the Ger Rebbe didn't see? And the Roshiva would explain, it's very simple. If you read her diary, she explains her secret. And he would explain that in her diary she wrote that she was a seamstress, and during the day she would make the clothing for the young women of Krakow. And she would talk to them, and she got to know them. And she really understood where they were and how far away they really were from Torah and mitzvahs. She really had the pulse. She had the fabric of where they really were. And she would, at night, she would write that she would cry at night and say to herself that I'm making beautiful clothing that covers the bodies of these young girls, but their souls are naked because they have no mitzvahs. And it bothered her so much that she would cry. And the Roshiva said, this is the secret. It's not brilliance. It's not being articulate. It's not charisma. But if you want to change Klal Yisrael, this is the secret. That we have to take to heart the problems, and the profound problems on an individual level, on a macro level. The profound problems of Jewish people, to the point that we understand the enormity of the human tragedy that we are living through. What does it really mean that a Jew does not have Torah and mitzvahs? That they're chelik of Olam Haba, their eternity, forever and ever and ever and ever and ever and ever and ever. And their relationship to HaKadosh Baruch Hu is so diminished from what it could have been for all of eternity. The gravity of that, to the point that we cry for it. If we do that, that will guarantee that each one of us who gets to that level of understanding, to their pain to that degree, that will be the engine that will assure that they will make a very profound difference for Klal Yisrael. The third point I'd like to share with you is that the Rosh Yeshiva always taught that being responsible meant doing everything that made sense, that we had to be responsible and make the most reasonable hashtadlis. And then if we do that, of course, we can 1,000% count on HaKadosh Baruch Hu to bless our efforts for success. But if we're not going to first take the responsibility and do what makes sense, then we are using tefillah or bitachon as an escape from reality. HaKadosh Baruch Hu can save the Jewish people in an instant. He doesn't need us. But he doesn't do it because he wants each of us to take the responsibility. And he would explain this point through the story of Yaakov Avinu in the beginning of Parshas Vayishlach, when he was on his way back to Eretz Yisrael and he was coming to confront his nemesis, his enemy, his brother Esav. And we know that Yaakov Avinu prepared in three ways. He split his camp, which demonstrated his willingness to go to war. If necessary, if Esav wanted to fight, he was prepared to fight. Second is he davened, prayed to Kadosh Baruch Hu that he should save him. And third is he sent him gifts, act of diplomacy. And the Rosh Yeshiva would explain, how is it possible that Yaakov Avinu, the man that quote-unquote invented Mariv, is first dividing his camp before davening? And he explained that this is the necessary approach, because you can only turn to a Kadosh Baruch Hu after we've taken the maximum responsibility humanly possible. And therefore, when confronting your enemy, Esav, it means that you have to be prepared to fight, to go to war, in order to protect the Jewish people. And his family was the Jewish people at that time. Only then, after we've taken the maximum amount of reasonable responsibility, should we and can we turn to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and rely on him? He would also explain parenthetically that why is it that the gifts came after going to war and prayer? And he would explain that because anyone who has watched the events of the State of Israel the last 10 years knows that if you are not prepared to go to war and you give your enemies gifts, could be in the form of land, that is capitulation and an act of suicide. And therefore, diplomacy can only work once it's clear that we are prepared to go to war for what we believe in. Otherwise, it's capitulation and will only empower the enemy to want more and more and more. And I believe that in many ways, I believe that this statement defined the Rosh Hashiva, at least to me, because the Rosh Hashiva was not just aware of the terrible problems facing the Jewish people, but he looked at assimilation and in later years of his life, the threat of radical Islam as existential threats that spiritually and physically called into question the existence of the Jewish people. And an existential threat is also described as being at war. When a nation is being threatened existentially, that means that we are at war. That's what war really means. And the Rosh Hashiva, in my opinion, more than any other person, recognized that the reality of the situation of the Jewish people today is tantamount to being at a state of war. We are at war against the enemy of assimilation. And on a secondary level, we're at war with those who want to physically destroy us. But what made the Rosh Hashiva completely unique was his willingness to live that way. We talk about it, we write about it, we speak about it. There are perhaps several minutes during the year that we take it very, very seriously. Perhaps we live with it. But the Rosh Hashiva lived with that day in and day out. And he conducted himself accordingly, and it affected his professional life, how he made decisions, allocations of resources, how he took risks, and also affected his personal life. Because how a person lives when they understand that they're at war is completely different than how they live at a time of peace. And to many people on the outside, the Rosh Hashiva was often very difficult to understand. I believe that one of the reasons was because we were all living during a time that we believed it to be a state of peace, and he, in a more real way, was living at a time when the Jewish people were really at a state of war. So of course, there was often times we did not understand his view of things, his perspective, how he wanted to go forward with particular areas and plans, so on and so forth. I'll just end with one last point, is that the Rosh Hashiva defined responsibility in two ways. He said, the buck stops here. It means that to be a man, to be responsible, means that each one of us looks at ourselves with the expectation that it is up to me. It is my responsibility. I personally hold myself accountable to fulfill these responsibilities. And second, there is no quitting. There is no giving up. If we have a responsibility, it's to the very, very end. And he certainly lived his life that way, despite the fact that he was very, very sick the last months of his life, but he was still yearning to fight for the Jewish people, because as long as he was alive, as long as he could contribute in any way, he knew and felt that it was his responsibility to do all that he could. But he would make the point, and I think in this way the Rosh Hashiva also stood very alone. He would make the point that our desire not to quit is not because we're stubborn and we're just going to keep going because we're going to keep going, but it's with seichel, it's with understanding that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will help us. We're not trying to make money here. This is not our personal development. We're talking about taking responsibility for the Jewish people. Who more than HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants the Jewish people to come home? So of course, it's axiomatic that He will be there for us to help us if we take the responsibility properly. And he would learn pshat in the Mishnah Avos different than everyone in the entire world. The Mishnah says as follows, right? Lo alecha hamlacha ligmor, v'lo ateh ben chorin lehivatel mimena. The entire world learns pshat. That essentially that means, what does the Kadosh Baruch Hu want from us? Best efforts. It's not our job to get it done. Our job is best efforts. You're making an effort. You're trying your hardest. We've all done great. We can go to bed at night. We can sleep well and know that we've done everything that a Kadosh Baruch Hu expects of us. As Berkowitz said, he found that explanation a profanity. He found that explanation to be a desecration of Torah. Because he would learn pshat in the following way. He would say, Lo alecha hamlacha ligmor. It's not upon us to complete the job. Who then is it upon? Obviously, it's up to a Kadosh Baruch Hu. And therefore, if it's up to a Kadosh Baruch Hu, Lo ata ben chorin livatal mimenu, then you cannot quit. Because if it's up to a Kadosh Baruch Hu, he wants this done. He doesn't want best efforts, the entire Jewish people being lost for all of eternity, the world becoming a completely depraved moral existence, and he wants best efforts. Hashem can't do better than that. There's no question in his mind that it means the Almighty is there to help us if we undertake. And that, in the basis of knowing that he is there for us, he wants it done, he's going to empower us, he's just waiting for us to take the responsibility, therefore we are unable to quit because it can be done. It may look daunting, it may look impossible, but regardless of how it looks, if you bring in a Kadosh Baruch Hu, you factor that into the equation, as any serious Jew should, then every single problem shrinks to become completely manageable. And that's what he meant by responsible. It's up to us. The Almighty expects each of us to get the job done because we all recognize the problem. We're on point. We've gotten our assignment, regardless of what your position is in Eishet Torah or the world. And we have to know that it could be done because we all know that this is what a Kadosh Baruch Hu wants. I want to end by just saying that the Rosh Yeshiva left a message. He wrote a letter approximately a year before he passed away. I believe he wrote the letter before he was sick. And in that letter, he asked everybody who has anything to do with Eishet Torah to really focus on point number two, is to really take the pain of the Jewish people, take the Tzara Shechina to heart, and to really feel that pain in an effort to help us become more real, and by feeling that pain and taking it to heart, it will motivate us to accomplish great things for the Jewish people. That was his final request of us. That's what he asked of us. I personally feel that that is perhaps the greatest tribute that we can pay to him on his yahrzeit, is to make an effort to take that request to heart, take it seriously, and to make an effort to do the cheshbon that he asked of us, whether it's every day, once a week, once a month, on some type of consistent basis, to really learn to feel the schar of the Shechina and the pain of the Jewish people. And I think in doing so, that will give him tremendous nachas and pleasure and really bring to the fore what for all those years he tried to teach us while he was here in Eishet Torah.